From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Defending a Monster, the story of John Wayne Gacy. Here's what's happening. Well, I've been talking to you about the roller coaster, the financial roller coaster of life, and indeed that's what it is. Yesterday, the stock market plummeted over 600 points. Today, it zoomed right back up. The Fed spoke and the financial markets rallied, the Dow Jones Industrial Average surging more than 429 points. It's the 10th highest point gain in history and the biggest since March of 2009. It was just one day after the Dow had its worst point decline since 2008. The Federal Reserve pledged to keep its key interest rate at its record low of nearly zero through the middle of 2013. Blogger and investment advisor Mish Shedlock with us on the line. Mish, this is a roller coaster, but it's, what does it all mean?
Oh my gosh, it's even a big roller. It's even a bigger roller coaster than people can imagine. I want to describe what happened last night. This is one of the advantages that you and I have when we're up watching things at 4 a.m., yep. You know, Chicago time. But what it means that when Bernanke comes out and makes that pledge that they're going to do this through 2013. That's tantamount to saying that we're in recession or we're headed for one, and this economy is worse than they're willing to describe. Now just look at the things globally that's going on. Japan is intervening in the yen. South Korea and Taiwan are actively buying futures to support their stock markets. The European Central Bank is buying the bonds of Greece, is buying the bonds of Italy, is buying the bonds of Spain and Ireland to support the bond market. Meanwhile, the assumption here is that Germany is going to backstop all of this without even putting this to a vote to the German people. But last night I was watching the stock markets. The futures were down 35 points about 3 o'clock in the morning. In the next hour, they rose 70 points, and all of a sudden, they're up 35. In the next 15 minutes, they plunged again and were negative. People aren't even seeing this action. This is what's going on with all of this intervention, and I'm telling you, it's going to frighten some people, and they're not telling us the truth about what is going on and why. They're not saying how bad this economy is, and they're making matters worse.
And here's another barometer, Mish. Look what's going on around this planet in terms of countries. Many uprisings now from poor people in London. It's gone beyond London. It's going to other cities now in England, four or five other cities. They've got problems there. They've got problems in Greece, Spain. There have been demonstrations in the Philippines, even in China. 1,000 cab drivers decided to stop traffic. They're ticked off over the price of fuel. This is happening worldwide. The difference between the haves and the have-nots, it's getting wider, and people are going to erupt.
It is. Well, the question here is, when does this happen in the United States? This is not an if. You know, this is a win, and it all comes down to the question of honesty. You know, if our leaders would just come out and say, you know, look, things are bad, you know, this is the situation, but no, they mask over all of this, they fight over all these budget deficits, they announce this package of cuts where they didn't cut anything. They agreed to cut future spending, and that's not even binding on future Congresses. So it's all maddening. And just look, you know, look at Greece. Look at what happened in Greece, because eventually the market, when you don't control your deficit, the market is going to come in and take matters in your own hands. George, I can't help but get the feeling, watching these markets in the last days, that there's something going on behind the scenes, something seriously wrong with Bank of America or Citigroup or some other major bank that they're hiding from us, that they're not telling us. That is what we're seeing here in these financial markets, and they won't come out and tell the truth. Instead, once again, they're pursuing policies of bailing out the banks and the bondholders at the expense of taxpayers. It's time we put a stop to it, and I don't know how to do it.
If you want to read Mish's blog, simply go to coasttocoastam.com, hook into our Twitter feed, and you'll get that link. Assuming the grimmest role of his office, President Barack Obama privately honored fallen forces returning home from war This time, the troops killed in a helicopter attack that claimed more American lives than any other strike of the Afghanistan war. In a moment, a special report on this situation and our involvement in Afghanistan and other regions of this planet. The D.B. Cooper story, the legend apparently living on now, unfortunately for the FBI, it also means that the only unsolved hijacking in U.S. history remains just that, unsolved. Last week, a new name emerged to add to the literally hundreds of possible suspects that have been examined in the 40 years since a man who became known to the world as D.B. Cooper hijacked a Boeing 727 on Thanksgiving Eve, 1971, and he jumped via parachute with $200,000 in bundled 20s, never to be heard from again. But the FBI said that DNA collected from items that belonged to a man named Lynn Doyle Cooper, a logger and Korean War veteran who died in 1999, did not match that of a partial DNA signature that the FBI pulled in 2001 from a JCPenney clip tie that the man left behind on the plane. So the mystery continues. The tsunami that was caused by the earthquake in Japan crossed the Pacific and broke off large chunks of ice from Antarctica, according to a study. Satellite photos show huge icebergs were created when the tsunami hit West Antarctica's Schulzberger ice shelf. This caused 125 square kilometers of ice to break off that had remained stable for 46 years. We've got that story in the highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. The Perseid meteor shower has been raining space dust on us since mid-July. But the best time to see this annual meteor shower is this week when the number of particles hitting our atmosphere peaks. And who's looking at the skies? None other than Steve Cates, Dr. Sky. Here we go again, Stephen.
Absolutely, George, and it's great to be back here on Coast to talk about things in the night sky on this very interesting night. And as you mentioned, and accurately as it is, the Perseid meteor shower will actually start to peak as we get into early Saturday morning the 13th. And here's some tips for the Coast audience. Look high into the northeastern part of the sky, and if your skies are clear, tonight might be a good night and into the early morning hours, because unfortunately, George, the full moon will interfere with the higher Perseid count. But you know, it's interesting. If you see this debris, remember, you're seeing objects that are the size of maybe a grain of sand, and what's even more phenomenal, they all come from a parent comet called Comet Swift-Tuttle. And I don't know if the listeners know this, George, but Comet Swift-Tuttle has been described as the single most dangerous object known to humanity, and here's why. Of all the objects that get close to the Earth on a regular basis, the nucleus of this comet passes the Earth every few hundred years, and the next close approach, get a look at this, August the 14th of 2126, we probably don't have to worry about it hitting the Earth, but simply this, George, if you see the debris from the Perseids, just know that you're seeing something very important. They're beautiful to watch. And the Coast audience, of course, is encouraged to check out drsky.com and all of our RSS feeds to help you be the best observer you can with these great skies.
Keep looking in the skies with Dr. Sky. Up next, Craig Hewlett begins our special report on war on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Well, he's so good at world events, I keep having him back. Craig Hewlett was both speechwriter and special assistant for special projects to retired Congressman Jack Metcalf. He's been a consultant to federal law enforcement, ATF, and a number of other agencies for more than 25 years. He is a consultant on geopolitical, business, and security issues. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Quite a ride these days there, Mr. Hewlett. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Great. Let's talk a little bit about the tragedy in Afghanistan and the shooting down of so many soldiers and military folks. Why were so many in one helicopter?
Well, there's two things about the incident that's probably going to trouble me for a very long time, and we may never really know the truth of it. The Taliban is claiming that they've got a new weapon that they've never deployed before, and that's the weapon that they used to shoot down this particular Chinook. And the 31 members of Special Operations, not counting the Afghan troops that were on the flight, but the Special Ops guys that were on the flight, were also the same members of the same unit that took out Osama bin Laden on that night, May 2nd.
Now, this, and I remember you being on the show with me right around that time period, and, you know, you were concerned about those people at that time.
Well, I didn't. First of all, I don't believe that it was necessary to do what we did. I think there were so many reports up to that point, and then afterwards it came out, even the administration had to admit it, that our intelligence community knew that bin Laden was not in control of anything like al-Qaeda for years, and that he was really, he didn't make up any kind of an organization like we were pretending it was. So to take him out and assassinate him, I thought it was a damn foolish move, because all it could do is make worse the situation against terrorism. And I've never believed the terrorism we're facing, including 9/11. I've never believed the terrorism is the kind of terrorism that we have customarily thought of it as. As I reported in my book years ago, I believe it's a different thing altogether. I never bought the al-Qaeda story the way they've described it, but I do believe there is an international movement that's coalescing around a genuine belief. Now, I don't really care whether you believe this is true or not. That's not the point. It's a question of perception. But out there in third world and developing countries, there's a genuine belief that they're dealing with a global corporate empire that's as medieval as anything you can possibly imagine.
True.
And it differs only in its high technology capability. But the mercantilism, the corporatism, the bailouts of the banks, the fact that there's more cash now held in our largest corporations than ever before in our history, yet at the same time, more Americans are unemployed for longer, over a longer period of time, than in our American history. And even in Western countries now, like you just pointed out recently, people are getting sick of it. The haves and the have-nots can't get, well, actually, I don't want to say that. That's not true. It can get much wider between the haves and the have-nots, because, like your last guest just said, when we look at it all, if you really could get your mind around what's going on globally, there really is absolutely nothing anybody can suggest can be done.
No, and that's the sad part and the scary part, Craig, about all of this. And how long do we stay? I mean, here we are. We're coming up now on 10 years in Afghanistan. We'll be coming up on, what, 9 years in Iraq next year, next March. I mean, when does it end?
Well, let me say something else. You know, when we talk about the Middle East, I don't look at the world the way most people do. I've got some friends out there that I consider friends, like Lou Rockwell and Ron Paul, and they know my take on things is a little out of sync with the mainstream media. When you say the Middle East, I don't know what you mean by that any longer, because the American people think of the Middle East somewhere between Morocco and Pakistan, Kazakhstan and Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, you know, when we're talking about, you know, 89 people just died in Syria tomorrow. I'm saying tomorrow because it hasn't hit our news yet. It'll be on the 9th, not the 8th. But 66, 2 days ago, were slaughtered in Syria. 121 children have gone dead in Syria. And we don't care. Why? Why do we not care what's going on in Sudan, Somalia, and Tunisia, but we're behind one of the most vicious bombing attacks since Bosnia?
Why?
What NATO did under Madeleine Albright. We've never witnessed anything like this, and we're calling it NATO. It's not NATO. It's America. Yet why is Libya being blown to pieces, and we pretend nothing's going on in Syria? There's only one answer. Oil.
It's oil.
It's oil. You can't, yep. There's no other possible conclusion.
There are no resources in these other troubled spots that humans are getting slaughtered by the tens of thousands in some cases, because you're absolutely right, Craig. There's nothing there that we need.
And in Afghanistan, I recently reported to my clients, one of my favorite companies, J.P. Morgan Chase, just discovered what in Afghanistan?
What'd they find? Gas?
Gold.
Gold.
Gold. Just like the Wild West, they found gold. So now we're telling the Afghan people, we're going to bomb them into submission, kill everybody that gets in the way, but anybody that will cooperate will help them build roads. They don't need roads. They herd goats.
They need security and food and everything else.
They need their own liberty. They need their own country. But they don't need roads. They don't have cars.
See, I think what's happening economically and everything else now is geared totally to this one world control.
Well, one world is a term that keeps coming up. But again, I'll repeat, the men that I've known throughout the last 30 years of my life, what I would call colleagues or peers or friends, they know my take on it has a very specific language. And I use the language of the corporate world because that's also my world. I've been named the president of a new corporation. I've been the president of corporations my entire adult life while I've done these other things as a public service. And I'm telling you, the regime that's being put in place is very multifaceted. It's corporate. It has no interest in nation states, and no one country is that imperial product. There's no imperial America, Japan, Germany, or Russia. The imperialism that we're seeing, we're understanding, beginning to, is corporate. And they have no allegiance to any nation or any nation's people, including you or I, here in America, even if the country is J.P. Morgan Chase or General Electric.
Craig,
not American any longer.
I just mentioned how many hotspots there are around this planet of civil unrest, people rioting, looting, burning, getting upset, and it's growing all over the planet. It's not just the Middle East anymore. There's the, you know, I just mentioned the cab drivers in China. In China.
China.
They're upset. The Philippines, they're upset. Greece, Spain, London.
Think about it. Syria. You revolt in Syria. The Assad family has no problem gunning you down in the street and leaving you lie there and let the dogs eat you. And yet we don't say a word about it because there's no natural resources and the corporate structure sees no interest in intervening. And something else about war, and I am a soldier. I was a soldier, Vietnam, 69 and 70. Let me tell you something about war and about these people and what they're capable of. Protracted wars achieve something most people, if you've never been in combat, you'd never deduce on your own. It's about killing the best and the brightest, the most courageous, the ones that stand up first. The best die young.
Our brave warriors.
Yes. Whether you like them or not, whether they're Syrian revolutionaries trying to overthrow the Assad regime or the anti-Qaddafi militants in Libya, whether you agree with them or not, I'm telling you, the people that come forward, no matter what the ideology is or what their take, their beliefs, the best and the brightest, the most courageous, the best of the breed, that generation, are the first to die.
Yes, they are.
So what is accomplished by protracted wars that go on for 9, 10, 12 years, or when, in our case, United States, we now have special operations personnel with a mandate to assassinate in 120 nations now.
You are able to control more because the best and the brightest are gone.
Eliminated.
Yeah.
We don't call it ethnic cleansing because it isn't targeted against a specific class, religion, race, male or female, gay or hetero. It's not that kind of a thing. But we are eliminating the best and the brightest, the most honorable, the most principled people in all of these nations are being wiped off the planet. My God, if there were such a thing as a world regime, a global economic world regime that could have such control, wouldn't it be much easier to control the least of us?
Exactly. The least bravest of us?
Precisely.
Yeah, good point. And at what point do people get up and say, enough is enough? Are we seeing that now?
Well, not yet in America. I think we're seeing it throughout the other countries that you've pointed out. But, you know, the anger in many cases, let me just talk to you about America.
I got 30 seconds, Craig. Go ahead.
It is happening throughout the world. But about America, Americans haven't matured enough in a free nation to protest violently or peacefully against the proper opponent. Instead, we go after your local law enforcement, the local sheriff's department, the cop on the street. We go after neighbors that are liberals or neighbors that are conservatives, blacks and whites. America is right now in the white population have decided every single Muslim on earth must be a terrorist and that that's what Islam teaches, which of course is not true. I know the real threat to human beings living day to day is fundamentalism.
You got that right. Craig, thank you so much as we continue our special report on just war. Up next, Marshall Klarfeld joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to continue with our special report this hour. Marshall Klarfeld was instrumental in producing two national political campaigns, including the 1968 presidential campaign to end the war in Vietnam and the New Hampshire presidential primary of 1976 that repealed the automatic congressional pay raise. Marshall's current national campaign is to end the Afghanistan war through a ceasefire peace conference using the Eagle Plan. Here's Marshall Klarfeld back on Coast to Coast. Marshall, how are you?
Fine, George. Thank you for letting me talk to you about this Eagle Plan. I think it's something that's worthy. You're the first station that's carrying us, and we're going to go national with this thing because I think it's a worthy way to end this mess that we're in over there.
It is a mess indeed. You know, we went over there under the plan, the auspices, to get Osama bin Laden to punish the Taliban for not turning him over to us.
Right.
Well, you know, we chased him out of there, and then eventually we did get him, some say.
Yeah.
And we got the Taliban out of there, and we've installed our own government. Now we've been there almost 10 years, Marshall, and I don't understand why.
Okay, George, there's no good reason why. We got ourselves in the middle of a civil war, and this is the same situation that existed in Vietnam in 1967, 68, when we offered the Eagle Plan to solve that quagmire. It worked there. In my white paper, I explained the details of why it wasn't implemented, but everybody who came in contact with it said that it was a good idea and it would work. General Westmoreland was on board. Ambassador Bunker was on board. President Thu, the president of South Vietnam, was on board. And even Lyndon Johnson, President Lyndon Johnson's Walter Rostow, who was his national security advice, agreed that it was a good plan. We could do it in a couple of weeks, but they got tied up in the old game, which was the Caucasians versus the Asians. And I think if people would go to our webpage, which just launched, they would understand that the way for us to get out, you know, there are peace talks going on right now, George, in Afghanistan. And the problem is that every time it comes to a point where something's going to happen, the Americans sit down at the table with the Asians. That doesn't work. This is the beauty of the Eagle Plan. The Eagle Plan eliminates superpower America from being at the conference table. It sets up a plan where just the Taliban and the Karzai government and the tribal leaders of Afghanistan sit down and solve their own problem.
Well, and let me ask you this. Unless you know a military person who's in Afghanistan, or you're a family member, or you know him through the family, if, God forbid, they've come back dead.
Yeah, right.
Many Americans probably aren't even really aware that we're still over there. I mean, believe it or not, that's absolutely true. And it doesn't affect them. They go on their daily lives. They do their thing. How do you get to those people, Marshall, majority of the people?
I'm going to try with this campaign that we're launching. It's a national campaign. We're going to get into every market where the radio and television goes, and we're going to tell people that there is a solution to get us out of there with honor. Now, the main A purpose of the Eagle Plan, because it was not a hawk or a dove. An eagle was what the American soldier wears on his helmet. And then the talons of one side is the arrows of war, and the other talons is the olive branch of peace. And our posture should be that we let them solve their own problem, which is self-determination. We agree to accept whatever solution they come up with, and the war's over. I mean, it's a ceasefire like in Korea. The ceasefire has lasted for 59 years. There is no peace settlement in Korea. It's just they aren't fighting and killing each other anymore.
Well, the ironic part about all of this, Marshall, had the Taliban willingly given up bin Laden or said, hey, he's over here, go get him, mm-hmm. you know, we can't do anything about it, nothing would have happened to that government.
I know.
They'd still be there.
I know.
And doing whatever they did that was wrong. And, you know, of course, we've heard their atrocities about women's rights and other religions. They you know, pull down temples and monuments.
Well, I think the Taliban will fail on its own, just as communism failed on its own. Any regime that has terror as their method of controlling the populace will not last very long. So we really need to back out with honor, let them solve their own problem, and offer them self-determination. That's what the Eagle Plan does. And I would encourage your listeners, if they are interested in this situation, which you point out many of them probably aren't, to go to our webpage. And you will read my white paper, which chronicles the complete story of the Eagle Plan starting in 1967 when it was launched by my boss and then implemented in Saigon by him, and came very, very close to ending the Vietnam War 3 years before it actually ended.
Well, that would have been nice. Marshall, stay with us. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you from listeners who just want to react to this story. We'll be back in a moment with Marshall Klarfeld on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Marshall, let's take some phone calls here as we talk about your Eagle Plan. And can people sign up to support this plan by going to the website?
Yes. Let me give you the website, George. We just launched this, eagleplaninafghanistan.webs.com. That's webs.com. And in there, you can just download my white paper, which is 18 pages, or you can read it, and they'll see the beauty of this plan. It's not my plan. I didn't invent it. The guy I work for, Mayor Wallace Johnson, Berkeley, California, is the one who wrote about it in his book, Responsible Individualism. But I was with him all the way, and we almost got there in that war. It could have been over Christmas Day, 1967. Think of the thousands of lives that would have been saved.
Well, that would have been nice. Let's go to some calls. You ready?
Yep.
Okay, let's go to Houston, Texas. We'll get you started. Alan, go ahead. You're on Coast to Coast.
Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just find it absolutely odd and strange that the same guys that got Bin Laden are the ones who were died. And I really believe that they made the ultimate sacrifice. And when I first heard the story, that was the first thing that popped in my head was, hold on, did someone get to our government and tell them, hey, we need the guy that took out Bin Laden because you weren't supposed to take him out? And I mean, I don't understand why we don't go after Afghanistan and the Taliban's money source, which is opium. Go in there and burn up their opium fields. Take their money power away from them.
That's right, Alan. They absolutely are funding their war efforts against us by selling opium and cultivating it. And they're very loyal to their leader, Mullah Muhammad Omar.
Wherever he is now.
Yeah, they don't know where he is. And if he ever is proven to be gone, though, you know, they'll fall apart. That's just, you know, they're tribal, they're warlords, they've had history. The Russians were in there for 10 years with their might and power trying to subdue them. And guess what? They lost. It was their Vietnam. And it's really a history that can repeat itself, and I'd like to see that we don't do that, that we get our troops out of there with honor, and the Eagle Plan is the way to do it because it absolutely solves the problem of loss of face, which is what Asians have as their credo.
Yep, and the Navy SEALs, of course, were from the unit that killed Bin Laden, the SEAL Team 6.
Right.
Of course, the poppy production was less when the Taliban government was running Afghanistan.
George, you're absolutely right. But now they've gone back to cultivating it and using it as a, you know, we've cut off their finances.
It's a black ops way for them to make money.
That's right.
And nobody's stopping
it. It goes against their credo, but, you know, they'll do anything they can to continue the guerrilla warfare. Now, an interesting thing about nationalism, George, and I see it there, and I think we should allow them through the Eagle Plan to decide their future for themselves. You know, if they want to go all Taliban, fine. Let them do that. But we have no right being in there telling them what to do. You know, we should, with honor, say, hey, solve your own problem. That's what the Eagle Plan does. And we'll abide by whatever you guys agree to. But sit down and have a ceasefire. Now, that's all detailed in my white paper, which can be downloaded from our webpage. And I would invite anybody that this is a nonpartisan effort, George. I'm doing it strictly nonpartisan because I want the American public to put pressure on our government.
Part of the problem, though, Marshall, is the Afghan government that we installed, Karzai and his little cronies, may be one of the most corrupt governments on the planet.
It is. And that was the same in Vietnam. In other words, the Thieu government was corrupt, just like the Karzai government is corrupt. And we were supporting them. And the way that worked was that we backed out of the table. We didn't sit down at the table under the Eagle Plan. But unfortunately, when they got to Paris, there was USA sitting down with Le Duc Tho, as I spell out in my white paper, and it never worked. They argued about the shape of the table and the agreement they came to, which got a Nobel Prize for our side. They didn't accept it because they knew it wasn't going to work. So we've got to avoid this trap of super Caucasian USA sitting at the peace table with the Taliban and the tribal leaders of Afghanistan. They've got to solve their own problem. Eagle Plan offers them that opportunity, and it's just a solution that I in my gut know will work, and I want to get our government to do it, but I've got to, you know, get the people behind me, behind the cause of the Eagle Plan. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm talking to you today, sir, on your program. I'm just trying to develop citizen outrage and protest so that they'll get to their congressmen and their senators and something will happen other than a repeat of the horror that was Vietnam. I mean, that was a disaster.
Let's go to Florida. Eddie, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Eddie. Thanks for calling.
Oh, George, thank you. I'm honored to actually speak to you, and Mr. Marshall. Good evening. How are you?
You're fine, Eddie. How you doing?
I'm all right. Hey, listen, I was in the Florida National Guard. I'll try to get a bunch of stuff out quick. I got deployed twice. And, you know, I tell you, the original reason I was going to call was to tell you that the amount of hope that we give to the people in Afghanistan, I can't even tell you. Like women that would get parts of their body blown off, and I don't know if you know how women are treated over there. They would just be allowed to die.
Oh, yeah.
We treated them and we helped them. You know,
if they wore fingernail polish, they'd chop their fingers off. I mean, it's a ruthless form of government. People will not tolerate it for any length of time.
Well, it's not the government only. It is the culture. It is.
Yeah, well, if they get control again. In other words, they were in control of Afghanistan before we came in there and installed the Karzai government and dumped them out.
But let's be honest. That's not why we went into Afghanistan.
No, it's not the reason we went there, George. You're absolutely right. Now, but we're in a quagmire. We've got to get out of there with honor. And the Eagle Plan is the way to do it.
Go ahead, go ahead, Eddie. Finish up.
I was just going to say, you know, we are spending money we don't have. We do need to get out of there. But we are doing good, but we need to get the heck out of there. However, I think it's a little deeper. I think it's I think if we were to pull out right away, I think it would create, you know, maybe a worse situation than
Eddie, they were in a civil war before we got there. They've been in a civil war for hundreds of years. They're a tribal society. The Russians ran into the same buzzsaw. They're guerrillas. You know, if you look at our history, the American formation of our government was done by George Washington. It was a guerrilla warfare against the biggest military power in the world, Great Britain, and we won.
We wore them down.
That's right.
We wore them down indeed. But let's talk about Afghanistan for just a second,
sure.
Marshall. I mean, had Saddam Hussein not gone into Kuwait and not tried to take over those Kuwaiti oil fields on the island there, he'd still be in power.
That's right.
All right? He'd still be there doing his thing. And his sons were as brutal as any two people on this planet. Let me tell you what they would do. They would see some Iraqi with a pretty girlfriend, okay?
Yes.
And they wanted her.
Right.
And so they would go get him, or they'd have someone get him,
right,
and they'd dump him feet first in a wood chipper.
Yep.
And they thought that was so funny. Now, they did what they wanted to do with the girl, and when they were done with her, God knows what happened.
Well, all brutal governments.
We need, I have no problems taking out people like that and governments like that strategically who are destroying their own people. I mean, that's what we should be there for a great defense and for an offense to stop people from being oppressed from those kinds of people. And you know, the fact that Saddam Hussein would even permit his sons to do this,
mm-hmm.
that'll tell you what kind of a sick guy he was.
He taught them how to do it.
Yeah,
that was the way he lived.
But, I mean, that's what we should have done. We should have gone into Iraq a long time ago just to take those clowns out.
Yeah, but right now we're facing a quagmire situation in Afghanistan. It's costing us $10 billion a month, George, plus all the destruction we're doing and all the people that are dying, including our guys. And it's not right.
I know
it's
that.
Not right. We need to solve the problem, and it takes a new policy direction by our government.
Let's go to Cochrane, Georgia. Rick, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Rick.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I had a couple of comments. First thing I'd like to point out is that Alexander the Great bypassed Afghanistan.
Yeah, wonder why.
But the other thing was, you know, the Taliban giving up Osama bin Laden, and the Bush administration said that, okay, if you have proof that Osama bin Laden had something to do with 9/11, we'll hand him over. And Bush said, we're not giving you any proof. He said, we know he did it, you know.
Yeah.
And I, you know, so in other words, they didn't have any proof.
Well, you know, the terrible thing, Rick, is that before you go back in history, when the Afghans were fighting the Russians, Osama bin Laden was working with the Taliban, and we were supplying them with arms. Our CIA was giving them arms to defeat the Russians.
Yep. He was a CIA asset, Marshall. He was a CIA asset, and
yeah,
he still
absolutely
might have been.
I mean, we did the same thing with Ho Chi Minh during World War II. We supported Ho Chi Minh against the Japanese. We promised him we would get rid of the French for him. I mean, there's a whole history of this repetition.
And then he turned to us for help, and we turned him down.
Absolutely. You know your history, George.
Oh, I study it. Absolutely.
Good for you.
You know why? Because I've got a lot of friends in St. Louis. They're Vietnamese.
Yep.
And they know the story better than any American, Marshall.
I had dinner one night with David Schoenberg, who was a CBS correspondent and a friend of Ho Chi Minh's. And he told me the whole story. And, you know, why Ho Chi Minh became a communist, because we turned him down.
We turned him down. Yep, yeah. We turned him down. And you know what? Same thing probably happened with Fidel Castro. We were helping him. We were supporting him. Heck, the only one who wanted Batista to stay in office in Castro, the mob and corporations.
That's right. You got that right, George. I mean, it's the same history over and over again. Now, the Eagle Plan, and I would encourage people to go to our website. And if I could repeat that one more time.
Sure, absolutely. And we've got a link for you, too, by the way.
Oh, great.
Up on our
great
massive website.
Because you download from the website my white paper, which is 19 pages, tells the history of the Vietnam War and how the Eagle Plan could have worked. It almost did work there. But political operatives got in the way of it because they had this idea that they knew better than anybody else. They were the best and the brightest, so forth.
Absolutely. And you know what, Marshall, your next job should be also Somalia. I mean, I was looking at some pictures of some little kids who are starving to death there. There's lawlessness. It's unbelievable. But you know what? As Craig Hewlett said just a few minutes ago, there's nothing there that we want.
Yeah.
I mean, it is truly,
well,
for
you know,
this
our
planet
foreign policy,
to let that happen. Is,
our foreign
is,
policy has big holes in it, George, as you and I know. And what my campaign is, my national campaign, is nonpartisan, and you don't have to contribute any money to it. All you got to do is read the white paper, go to our webpage, and then start calling your congressmen and your senators to try to get them to understand that what we're trying to, they were trying to make peace with the Taliban, but it's not going to work.
No, that's not going to work.
We can't be at the table. We have to set it up, and that's what the Eagle Plan does. Set it up so they solve their own problems.
You know what? I don't even know who the Taliban is anymore. Do you?
Yeah. Well, they're described as the Students of Islamic Knowledge Movement.
I want to know how they're getting the weapons and getting these little missiles to shoot down our helicopters.
Iran, and they're being
you know, that's
Iran.
Where we should get tough. You know, you say, look, you provided that stuff. Watch this. It's your turn. Anyway, Marshall, good luck. We'll put a link up for you on coasttocoastam.com. When we come back in just a moment, well, let me tell you something. This will be a story that if you have a queasy stomach, this time you might not want to listen to. We're going to be talking about the mind of a serial killer, John Wayne Gacy defending a monster, next on Coast to Coast AM.